kiddos.
Your Stark Raven lunatic pod host, Jay Daniels here. And have I got a blockbuster announcement for you regarding today's podcast. So come on, I want you to gather around in your best granny takes a trip paisleys. And your crushed velvet pants and your Cuban heels. And you too, all you lovely lady listeners in your go-go boots and your mini skirts. Come on, I won't bite. Well, sometimes, but only if you want me to. Kiddos, you better hold on steady and get ready. It's going to be a psychedelic blockbuster today. That's right. This podcast is going to be about all things red plastic Buddha. Oh, yeah, baby. Lots of interviews and music from all of the Red Plastic Buddha's albums. In fact, I'm going to start today's proceedings by putting out a song from their brand new album, Songs for Mara. It's called Trip Inside This House. Today's interview about the Red Plastic Buddha, I'm joined by one of the true great songwriters in today's psychedelic music scene, a man whose well-crafted tunes carry on in the tradition of Ray Davies, Syd Barrett, Pete Townsend, Arthur Lee, and Paul Weller, to name a few. I'm referring, of course, to Tim Ferguson, the founder, the front man, the lead vocalist, stellar bassist, and musical leader of the Red Plastic Buddha. Good morning, Tim, and welcome to the Muffin Junkie.
Thanks, Jay. It's great to be here.
Before we begin the interview, Tim, I just wanted to say to you, and could you please pass this on to the other members of the band, the brand new album by the Red Plastic Buddha called Songs for Mara is a magnificent modern psychedelic gem, a magical listening sojourn through the void, and it's the band's best album to date, in my humble opinion. And of course, I'm eager to ask you lots about this exciting brand new album, and I have many questions for you later in part two of the interview about the Red Plastic Buddha. But Tim, for now, as a precursor, could you talk a little bit about the song from your new album that I played in the podcast opener called Trip Inside This House?
That was a song that we actually recorded for another really great DJ, Valis Hertel from St. Louis. He runs a show called Trip Inside This House, and every year or so, he will ask some bands to write a song with that phrase in it. And it's just such a great, you know, very musical line that the song just kind of flowed, and that's what we did. We tripped inside this house.
Now that you've enlightened us, Tim, about that song from the Red Plastic Buddha's latest album, Songs for Mara, that you've just released, could you take the listeners on a trip through the band's past and talk about the band's first album, The Sunflower Sessions, and the early lineup incarnation of the Red Plastic Buddha, and anything else, of course, you'd like to share from that time period?
Well, it's been a long time since we put that record out. The band started in 2005, and we played our first show. It was International Pop Overthrow, David Bash's Traveling Circus, and it was kind of a learning process. A lot of the songs were holdovers from a band that I had in the 90s, with a notable exception, I guess, of the cover of Roller Coaster, which is an old 13th Floor Elevator song. But we were kind of learning our way through the studio process, and I listen to it now, and I just think of things that I would do differently. But I don't know. It was what it was. This is a snapshot in time. And I don't know. It was our first record. So
it's an absolutely excellent album, Tim. And in fact, I'm going to play a couple songs now from that album, The Sunflower Sessions by the Red Plastic Buddha. Tim, could you act as our listening guru and lead us into these songs? Gingerbread Pornography, the live version, Kerosene, and finally, Roller Coaster.
Let's see. Gingerbread Pornography was a song that we intended on doing, not as a live thing, but we did a show in a studio with a live audience and a bunch of bands. And I just liked the mix so well that I said, well, let's just throw this on the record. But it's just a silly little song about that feeling that you get when you meet someone and you really just can't quite form the words to talk in any kind of an intelligent manner. Something that I've been extremely guilty of in my life. Kerosene is a song about a silly old relationship. Boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy loses mind, and all the mayhem that ensues. And finally, Roller Coaster. Again, that was a cover of the old 13th Floor Elevators classic, which has also been covered by, oh gosh, Spaceman 3 and a bunch of others. But it was one that I really like to pay homage to some of the greats that went before us in the psychedelic community. And when we were getting ready to go into the studio, we were just not getting the song, and it was not sounding right. And I came really close to nixing this from the record, But then out of nowhere, our rhythm guitarist at the time, Todd Leiter Weintraub, just came in. He had the answer, and he just played his heart out, and it sounded amazing. It just, like, it all clicked. Everything that everyone was doing worked. So it's still one of the songs that is very frequently used in our live sets, and I love it. So hope you will too.
Gingerbread pornography, orange cream geometry. I don't know what I'm talking about since I met you. Dionysus dressed in drag, a white chocolate body bag. I don't know what I'm talking about since I met you. Something kinda happened because you went on. In my head, electric supernova in the night. No matter what I do or say, you just don't make no sense. And nothing's ever gonna put it right. Skip the needle, tiny pills, penny candy, M's and thrills. Gingerbread pornography, Paris in my bumblebee. And I don't know what I'm talking about since I met you. Something kinda happened because it went off in my head. Electric supernova in the But run.
I think it's fair to say, Tim, that you're a spiritual guy, and many of the Red Plastic Buddha's songs reflect this. And I love that you do it in a real, melodic, psychedelic way. Could you elaborate on the songwriting with respect to the spiritual side of things and how it all fits together so perfectly? How is it reflected in the band's cover art, for example?
Well, I think one's spirituality is kind of just part of their personality. And hey, I'm rhyming. But it's I think it's kind of the lens with through which you see the world. And you know, everything that we do is, you know, it's part of that. And it kind of informs my just how I view the world. And that's bound to show up in the songwriting. As far as the cover art, I don't know. I mean, we use a lot of Buddhist images and that sort of thing, but I think we're kind of more informed just by the message that the album art conveys. The first one was really kind of an introduction. We used kind of like themes of that you'd see like on Fillmore West posters back from, you know, 67, 68. A lot of the same kind of color schemes and that. Kind of a calling card. The second record, All Out Revolution, I was really trying to get across the concept of light versus dark with the idea of the revolution I'm kind of referring to is the revolution of life against the void, the cold, sterile darkness of nothingness, and the revolution is love. The newest record has a skeleton Buddha. And that's really getting into the whole Songs for Mara theme of, you know, in the darkest moments of the Buddha and, I guess, my struggle of just trying to get through this life. You know, it's pared down to the core, black and white, and that's really it. So that's basically it.
Well, Tim, that was an excellent talk about the spiritual side of the Red Plastic Buddha's songs. But what I wanted to ask you about right now. Now, when you and I were talking casually before this interview began this morning, you happened to mention to me that Bruce Foxton of The Jam was a huge influence on your bass playing. Could you tell the Muffin Junkie listeners more about that and about how you approach the bass playing on the Red Plastic Buddha's songs?
Bruce Foxton is just an amazing bass guitarist. I would listen to the Jam records and try to, you know, when I was learning to play, just try to play along, and I could never get it. It was just, he was playing too fast and just doing these really amazing little melodic runs. It just took me years and years and years to sort out what he was actually doing. He was using a pick, and I was using my fingers. So inadvertently, I became a better bass player by trying to emulate Bruce Foxton, and at completely admittedly never even coming close to his brilliance. But in the band, I really don't consider the bass guitar to be such an important or integral thing. I think my bass playing is actually pretty pedestrian. But, you know, within the context of the group, again, I've got, you know, guitars and keyboards and drums and just, you know, walls of vocals. And I just want to kind of stay low in the mix and not being too you know, out there, because everybody else is just being so cool. I just kind of want to, you know, listen to them. So I've got enough to work to do just with the vocals.
Why don't we project forward now, Tim, and talk about the Red Plastic Buddha's 2011 follow-up album called All Out Revolution. Could you talk about this next incarnation of your band playing on this particular album? And how much did it differ from the Red Plastic Buddha's initial lineup in terms of working together on the songs? And what are your recollections about this time period of the Red Plastic Buddha?
Well, this is kind of when we started going through our non-ending personnel issues. We lost Todd Leiter Weintraub, the guitarist I mentioned earlier. He had a band called Hop on Pop and still does. And, you know, absolutely brilliant and wonderful songwriter in his own. But, you know, he really felt that he needed to explore that and devote his time to that. Absolutely no hard feelings. He left the group. We had another rhythm guitarist for a while, and then he left. It's hard to remember all this thing. But Pam, my wife, Pam Richardson, came on board as our rhythm guitarist. And those were very happy times for the band. She fit in really well. She had never really played with effects or slide before, and she just adapted to both really, really well. I think during the run-up to All Out Revolution, I started getting a lot more confident with my songwriting, and I started taking on more and more of that and kind of maybe isolating myself a little bit. I would still be drawing from riffs that we would come up with in practice. Todd Lazar, our lead guitarist at the time, just has this amazing facility to come up with these just unbelievably hooky little licks. And the song Waves on this record was really based on one of his riffs. It's just this really beautiful Eastern sounding thing. And I loved the riff so much that I did nothing really creatively for months except work on the lyrics for this song. And I was staying up late at night and, you know, just working with, you know, a pad of paper in a dark room. And finally, I brought the words into the practice space. And we all just kind of hashed this thing out together. And it was really one of the most amazing experiences I've had in music, where everybody just kind of like poured their hearts and souls into something, and everybody was just so collaborative, and it was really a cool experience. Looking back, you know, right after the recording of that, or actually during the recording, I lost our keyboard player Matt Walters and Todd Lazar virtually at the same time. So, you know, it was just as we were coming together, we were falling apart. So I guess there's something, you know, very Buddhist about that.
Tim, A La Revolution, for the most part, contains many flower power songs that are upbeat and are amazing, along with a few reflective numbers. I'm going to play some songs from that album. Perhaps you could talk about them right now. Daisy Love, Sad Girl, and Waves.
Daisy Love was a song that I wrote for my lovely wife. We were talking one day, and, you know, we're both grown-ups, and she'd been married before, and she's, you know, we were both always with musicians, and she said, you know, no one's ever written me a song. And I thought, well, I'm going to write you a song. And I came up with like the first verse immediately, and then it was like 2 years before I could finish it. But we got it done, and it's been a real popular song for us. Sad Girl is just a little, we need a ballad, so it's not hard for me to go on a good wallow. So I kind of did that, projecting it out from the female sense, and that's what we got there. Waves, I mentioned a little bit earlier. Really, I think one of the most important things that we've done, we've had, going into the studio, we had a really firm grasp on where the song should be. On the third take, we absolutely nailed it. And then once we got in, you know, firmly into the mixing bit, we started bringing friends in. Chris Tiratilli came in to play sitar. Jennifer Williams did the haunting, beautiful backing vocals. I hope I'm not forgetting anyone, but let's see, Brian Leach, our engineer, did some additional keyboards. I couldn't be happier with the song. You know, looking back very often on music, you're like, oh God, I should have done this, should have done that, I should have added this, I shouldn't have had that. That one I'm actually happy with.
Spark will in her. sad girl who says she doesn't care. Friday night she's reading Baudelaire. No calls, she disconnects her phone. Sad girl would rather be alone. Some boy broke a tender heart. One touch and she just falls apart. Cold sun spins around the sky. Sad girl just hangs her head to cry. All at sea she sinks like stone. A sad princess on her throne. And I wish that I could dry her tears away.
We'll be right back.
kiddos. You can certainly hear from the music that I've played by the Red Plastic Buddha today just why they are one of the top bands. I'm sorry, Tim. My stomach is rumbling. I have to confess, Tim, that I'm a little bit hungry here. I kind of rushed to the Muffin Junkie podcast studio this morning and skipped breakfast. Now, this is bad because I know this show has muffins all the time on it, but I have a little bit of a hunger for donuts, a little bit of a need for donuts with sprinkles on them. Now, I hope my poor nutritional choices don't horrify you, Tim. Oh, man, I'm hungry. And I'm parched, too. I could use some tea. Maybe I think what I might do is have Stephanie bring us some tea. I'll make the arrangements for that, Tim. And maybe you could talk about how one could have tea Buddha style. We wait for the tea to arrive.
I'm sorry, I ate a donut. Actually, no. Why would I be horrified by your eating habits? Let's see. If you want to get Buddhist about your tea, I would say that you can use it as an exercise in mindfulness, something that Buddhists talk about a lot. I think we spend most of our lives worrying about a future event that may never happen, or killing ourselves over things that happened in the past that we think that we should have done a different way or something. But maybe having your tea would give you an opportunity to just sit quietly and enjoy the sensory experience of it. The warmth of the cup, the flavor of the tea. Listen to the quiet that's around you. That'll keep you kind of centered and in the now. And when your tea is over, you can go out and have another donut.
And Tim, a great explanation about Buddha's tea. And speaking of food, I can hear Stephanie here with a cart. I had her bring some tea and some snacks for us as well. Tim, I hope you don't mind. Here she is right now. Hey, Stephanie.
Hi, Mr. Daniels. I brought the food and tea that you requested for yourself and Mr. Ferguson.
Stephanie, you are the best. I don't know what I'd do without you.
Mr. Ferguson, would you prefer a... green tea with scented flowers in it, or perhaps a black oolong tea.
Oolong, you can't go wrong.
Sorry to interrupt you, Steph. Give me the green tea with the leaves in it. Tim, do you take sugar in your tea?
Sugar and milk. Thank you.
There we go.
Yeah, Mr. Ferguson, Tim, if I might call you that.
Of course.
We have Greek yogurt, blueberry muffins. They're very scrumptious. It's always popular with the guests here. Huh. And then there's a triple berry banana combo muffin. And finally, to finish up, there is a strawberry pineapple muffin with marshmallows on it. And... sprinkles. I don't know what's in that, but it looks delicious, too.
I think I'm going to go with door number two, the triple berry. Thank you.
Tim, you're absolutely welcome. It's a pleasure to serve you tea and muffins.
I just want to say something here. I don't see my donut with the sprinkles on it, Stephanie. Where are my donuts with sprinkles on them? I asked for that. What happened, Steph?
Mr. Daniels, you know that upper management already has you on a diet. You know I can't bring you those donuts.
Oh, for Pete's sake. I'll talk about where you can leave that donut for me later. Just keep your voice down. Now, Tim, you're not on a diet. You sure you want that healthy choice that you picked off the cart? Tim, that muffin with the marshmallows looks much better than what you picked. Oh, my goodness, it looks scrumptious. Maybe you could say it was for you and just sort of send it over my way. Isn't that muffin good? Doesn't it? It's got your name written all over it, Tim.
Yes, it does, but
I'm going to have two of them. I'm going to be bad.
Mr. Daniels, what are you doing? Stop. I'm not going to have two muffins, Mr. Daniels. No.
Tim, while we're enjoying a well-deserved break of tea and muffins, I thought I'd play several taped interviews with former Red Plastic Buddha members.
Okay.
First being Pamela Richardson.
Yeah.
And then we'll hear the flip side of the tape. We'll hear... an interview with Todd Lazar. Why don't we get to that right now?
Sounds good.
Now, Pam, you are the lone guitarist.
on the band's two ballads, Sad Girl and Being Human? Was this decision based on a softer approach that a female guitarist might take, or was it for some other reason?
I think Tim just really appreciates my style and the acoustic. These ballads, that's my favorite way to play. It's my favorite style in my own songwriting. So it's a type of playing that I feel confident about, that I feel I do well. There are certain songs of Tim's that I just know right away what I believe will work best, and these two struck me that way. Just simple atmospheric acoustic to give the song itself some room and to complement the vocal and the lyrics, you know, without overpowering.
Your slide playing on Waves, She's an Alien, and Little White Pills is very reminiscent of Syd Barrett. Can you talk now about your approach?
My approach? It's funny, until Waves, I didn't know I could play slide very well. I had messed with it when I was first playing when I was younger, inspired by Bonnie Raitt and June Millington, cool people like that. But ultimately, I eventually decided to focus on just being the best rhythm guitarist I could be and let others handle the flashier stuff, and that's worked out really well with my own music. And then Tim brought Waves to the band, and everyone seemed to know what to do on it except me. I almost said I would sit it out because I didn't know what to contribute. It was already sounding so full and so fine. And then someone suggested I try slide. I don't remember who it was. It might have been Tim. I'm not sure. But I know Todd Lazar loaned me his slide to give it a try. So I just started playing around with it during rehearsals, using the effects and all that. And it just came to me. It worked. The song itself was so inspiring for that type of playing. So it came pretty quickly, actually. And after that, I found it easier to write slide parts for the other songs. So with slide, it's purely instinct because I'm not a trained slide player. I'm not really much of a lead player. I just listen and try things. I try to see whether a certain part should be more aggressive or another part more delicate, that sort of thing. It's just kind of instinct. I was delighted, though, that I could bring something unique to Waves and to the other songs, too. I was really pleased about that. And it's something I've thought about bringing to my own music at some point, which maybe I will. But, yeah, it was just a great thing to be able to do and to realize the power of slide. It's really fun.
This is the first Red Plastic Buddha record where you were not an official day-to-day member of the band. How different was it coming in as a guest musician?
Well, at first I felt a little different because I hadn't been practicing with the band like I had on a weekly basis for years and years. I've been playing with Tim Ferguson and Dave since about 1996, so coming in where I wasn't an official member of the band felt a little strange at first, but once I heard the music and sat with it for a while and went into the studio where I'm really comfortable working at Joyride with Brian Leach, who's so fantastic, I felt very comfortable pretty quickly. And since I've known those guys for so long, the songs just sort of came out very naturally because I feel a connection with the type of music as well as Tim and Dave. So for me, it felt like going home for the holidays where the conversation just picks up right where you left off. The music is the same for me.
Todd, do you think the sound of the Red Plastic Buddha has changed since you've left the group?
I don't really feel like the music is changing, but to me it seems like it's evolving. Now, I've known Tim Ferguson since about 1995, and I've been playing with him for a long time. And every year that he continues to write music and create music, what seems to happen is the music is getting closer and closer to what I believe he's really trying to say in his soul. So the more that I hear it and the more time that passes, I think it just becomes more clear and comes to fruition, basically. And it doesn't surprise me to hear that this record seems a little bit more dense and more elaborate than the past records. I just believe Tim is able to work with, especially in the studio with Brian, getting what he wants out of the music, whether it's calling upon old friends to play with him or additional musicians. I think it's like a composition that is becoming more available as time goes on.
Finally, Todd, I was wondering, you were a member of the Red Plastic Buddha for many, many years. Do you miss being in the band?
Yeah, I really miss being in the band. Not only do I miss seeing my good friends, Tim and Pam, on a weekly basis and sharing musical passion with them, but I don't feel like the part of me that's always been in Red Plastic Buddha will ever go away. I think it's always going to be part of it. My life circumstances dictated that I really didn't have the time to devote to the band like I really needed to. Having a child and another one on the way and going back to school made it really impossible to really, give it the time that it needed. But I'm always going to be friends with Tim, and who knows, in the future, maybe we'll be able to share some music again and maybe contribute more parts to future recordings. I would really love that, and I really feel honored that I was able to do it on the last record.
The Muffin Junkie is a psychedelic trip. A psychedelic trip. The Raving Loony plays the best lo-fi. Sounds from every country and city and town.
Welcome back, kiddos. Before we begin part two of the interview with Tim Ferguson of the Red Plastic Buddha, I just have to say, I am still floating on cloud nine. It has always been a dream of mine, and today it was fulfilled to have tea with Tim, a man who is one of the coolest frontmen in rock and roll, and he certainly has the grooviest shoes. They ooze coolness. I guarantee neither cooler than mine and yours combined, and most of the population. Now, Tim, I thought we'd focus in part two of the interview about the Red Plastic Buddha solely on the band's brand new album, Amando Cool, amazing new album, by the way. It's called Songs for Mara, and amazing it is. Now, Tim, there's a track on there called Being Human. It's hauntingly beautiful. Perhaps you could talk about this song and what it's all about, and then I'll play the track for the listeners.
It's a bit of a cry for help, actually. I was kind of in a really bad place. I was dealing with the death of my mom, and I lost my dog, and just all sorts of horrible things at once. And I just, music is an amazing thing. It will save your life if you let it. And that's pretty much probably all I should say about this song.
Some people are good at making money. Some people are good at making rules. Some people are good at taking orders. Some people are always willing take everything too far. people are really just born in the wrong place at the wrong time. There's no sense in
goodness, what a beautiful track, Being Human. Now, Tim, I think it's fair to say that the new album is darker than the predecessors by the Red Plastic Buddha. But at the same time, the new album Songs for Mara retains the melodic, musical aspects of the band's previous albums. Could you talk now about the inspiration for these new songs which formed the new album?
Yeah, this was kind of basically a two-parter. I think that All Out Revolution was kind of guided by a lot of the same themes, but we were taking a far more hopeful stance, saying that these great huge problems that human beings are faced with, mostly of our own making, are spiritual salvation might be the answer through it, a spiritual evolution. But in the time between the two records, it just feels like things have gotten darker and more desperate. So I was kind of looking into that void a little bit darker and a little bit harder. And the path through it, I was really kind of looking towards the Buddha's example of, a lot of these problems are our own. Our own issues with greed and nationalism and bigotry and all these things that are going on. And they're really very much ego-based. And I think that we need to look within on these problems and not just assign them to other people, because ultimately the problems of the macro of everyone are really reflected in our own selves. So it's that bit about, not casting the first stone. We really have to get our own houses in order. And we do that using the Buddha's example of, taking on our own selfish thoughts and kind of starting to live for other people even if it's just simple things, simple kindnesses.
Tim, all of the Red Plastic Buddha's albums are exceptionally well-produced. And Songs for Mara, your brand new album by the Red Plastic Buddha, is pristine in this regard. Could you talk about Brian Leach and his role as an engineer on Songs for Mara right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Brian is a brilliant, brilliant man. He is the head engineer at Joyride Studios in Chicago, the Grammy-winning Joyride Studios, I should say. A brilliant place to be. Brian and I have a very unique relationship, and very often we work together on some other things. We recorded my wife's band, the Pralines, their last record there. And very early on, he and I were just reading each other's minds. I would like raise my finger and he's like, I got it. And he would make the change that I didn't even have to tell him to make. So we've been acting as producer and engineer now on I think 3 or 4 projects. And it's always a pleasure. And he has great ideas. And he has the ability to kind of harness the madness that is me when I come in and say, I want a backing chorus of cicadas. He knows what I'm talking about, and he can actually make it happen. And no matter what challenge I throw at him, he is always up to the task. And not only is he brilliant from an engineering standpoint, he's a wonderful human being, and just he's a great friend. And I'm very happy to be able to work with him.
Right now, Tim, I thought it might be real groovy for the listeners to hear another track from the Red Plastic Buddha's brand new album, Songs for Mara. And this track is called Girl Like You. What can you tell us about this track before I play it?
Just a little bit of fun. I needed a very poppy 60s sounding song, I was thinking. And this is what came out, kind of riffs on Stepping Stone, maybe, or borrows liberally. We had, I think, 4 guitarists on this. I think there's some Aaron Barber on there. Definitely Greg Kirby came in and did huge work on it. I think Brian Leach did some guitar work on this. I think that might be his final lead. And we even had Phil Angotti, a really well-known guy in Chicago, come in with some 12-string. My wife might even be on it. There was a line of guitarists going out the door. It was insane, but just a fun bit. That's all.
You tease and you're cruel.
Rosa, another amazing track from the Red Plastic Buddha's brand new album, Songs for Mara. Girl Like You, great stuff. Right now, though, folks, I have to say Tim was called away. But he don't worry, worry not, because he'll be back to finish up the interview here. But he had to take an important phone call that's to do apparently with the filming of their new video, with the footage from the new video, She's an Alien, another song from Songs for Mara. So while Tim's away, I thought I'll put on another cassette interview. Get the cassette out. It has an interview with Eric Algren, the band's current keyboardist. Also an interview with Greg Kirby of the Luck of Eden Hall. And Greg helped out in a very big way, as you'll hear, with the Red Plastic Buddha's Songs for Mara. Let's get to that now. Eric, this is your first record with the Red Plastic Buddha. How does the recording process work? I wonder, is there a lot that is written in the studio? Or are your keyboard parts fairly complete by the time you arrive to track?
I'd say that all my stuff is pretty much completed by the time we do the initial tracking. By the time we went into the studio to record the album, we'd been working on these songs together as an ensemble in the practice studio and on stage for quite some time, and all the parts were pretty well set down. There was a certain amount in terms of overdubs and layers that I added in later as sort of directed by Tim, and we did all of that in the studio kind of on the fly. So probably about 20% of what you hear me playing on the record, that 20% you don't hear when I play live, is the stuff that was added in the studio.
Eric, you've seen a lot of changes in the space between the last album, All Out Revolution, and the band's brand new album, Songs for Mara. What is the biggest challenge that the band faces in dealing with the turnover?
Well, I don't know that I can really speak for the band as a whole in terms of challenges. I can say that for me, probably the biggest challenge was adjusting my style playing and the sort of arrangements and my patches and settings on my instrument when different players would come or go in the band. Certain people play a lot and I need to play less. Other people play less and I need to play a lot more. When we were down to one guitar player, I certainly had to do a lot more work, a lot bigger playing to be to sort of fill in that area in the band when we were playing live shows. And now that we're up to full strength again, I can back off a little bit and play a little bit less. And that's probably been the biggest challenge.
Now, Tim gives you a lot of credit, Greg, for saving Songs for Mara, the brand new Red Plastic Buddha album. Can you talk about where the project was when you stepped in?
The project had really become a monster. And he was very frustrated after spending hours trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. Now, Tim had been working with a guitarist whose style didn't quite fit with what he'd envisioned on Songs for Mara, and I offered to fill in. It wasn't a question of good or bad musicianship. It was that the guitarist's roots weren't really planted in garage psych. So Tim supplied me with a few tracks to get familiar with, and after getting a rough idea of the song's structures, I entered the recording studio, employed the proper pedals, namely my Crybaby, Little Big Muff, and Echoplex devices, and let loose. Luckily, the result was the elixir that fulfilled Master Ferguson's quest.
There seems to be a lot of similarities between the Red Plastic Buddha and the Luck of Eden Hall as bands, but can you talk about how different it is recording with the Red Plastic Buddha?
That experience was a blast, and I was honored to be there. Recording with Tim and Brian was a huge ego boost. I'd lay down a track, and they'd both be behind the board literally jumping up and down with joy. When I tried to tell them I was just working out details, they would both tell me the take was perfect and we'd all have a laugh. I think I blasted through all of the tracks in a couple days. Yeah, we really had a lot of fun together. When I'm recording tracks for the Luck of Eden Hall, it's mostly a very solitary experience because I'm the engineer and the producer in our rabbit hole studio, and I spend countless hours working alone. I really don't need anyone else around when I'm tracking guitar parts. And that being said, it's one of my favorite things to do. I really enjoy all aspects of the recording process. And whenever I'm in the recording studio working on a project, there's really nowhere else I'd rather be.
Now, Tim has rejoined us, folks, but he has to leave fairly shortly. Yeah, he has other commitments with the video, with the editing. And so, Tim, where can the Muffin Junkie listeners check out Songs for Mara, and indeed all of the Red Plastic Buddha's albums? And just where can they hear your band play live in the near future, in North America and otherwise?
Well, you could find all our songs on our Bandcamp page. That's redplasticbuddha.bandcamp.com. We have a Facebook page. Twitter is rdplasticbuddha.com, I guess. Or just rdplasticbuddha. As far as touring, we're keeping it pretty regional these days. We are in the Midwest, in Chicago, playing fairly often. We have kind of like a 500-mile radius that we try to hit. But we are hoping to get out to Austin for Austin Psych Fest next year and maybe just keep expanding outward from there. So
I just wanted to thank the Red Plastic Buddha and Space Cat Records for granting permission for the Muffin Junkie to play your music here today on the podcast. Now, I know, Tim, that you really have to get going. I know there's a car waiting for you literally outside here in the parking lot outside of the podcast studio. So thanks for taking time, Tim, out of your busy recording and video and touring schedule and being a real classy guy and doing this two-part interview about the Red Plastic Buddha's music on today's podcast of the Muffin Junkie. I also wanted to thank everybody else from the Red Plastic Buddha, that present and past members that took part in the taped interviews on today's podcast. I want to thank Pamela Richardson, Todd Lazar, Eric Algren, and also Greg Kirby from the Luck of Eden Hall. And Greg, your band is excellent, and I'm a huge fan of them, and an open invitation for your band to appear in 2015 on the Muffin Junkie. Just remember that. Now, as we go out, I wanted to also mention to the Muffin Junkie listeners that in the second week of October, there'll be a brand new podcast of the Muffin Junkie, and the musical guest will be an outstanding Liverpool singer-songwriter called Kevin Woodruff. So look forward to that. I thought you could do the honors, Tim, and lead us out with a song from the Red Plastic Buddha's brand new album, Songs for Mara. It's called Stuck on Zero. Over to you, Tim.
Well, thank you, Jay. It's been a lot of fun. Stuck on Zero, a little bit of fun with zombies. It's kind of a popular theme going on in the world right now. But you know, the undead, I should say, can't be all bad. So let's have fun with them, I say.